This is The Bottom Line. I'm Doug Wells, and today we are speaking with Jeff Smith, founder and CEO of Alliance Health. Since 2010, Jeff and his team have taken his company from $0 in sales to over $60 million per year. They are based in Sandy, Utah. They serve nearly 100,000 customers nationwide, and they employ over 300 people. Jeff, thank you for joining us on The Bottom Line.
Thank you for having us.
Why don't we start off with telling our audience what Alliance Health does?
Alliance Health, our mission really is to help people with chronic diseases improve their lifestyle. We do this by, we have these communities, and so digitally, people go on these websites and they learn about us. So we find people that need help in these chronic areas, and then we supply them product for them. So we save them money in the products that they need. There could be supplies or drugs that they need. And we supply those to them, and then we keep them healthy by keeping them taking their medications. We have text reminders and apps and all kinds of stuff to help them. And then we have a lot of educational things that we do to help them on the other end to keep them healthy and try to improve their health in the disease that they have.
And one of your big markets is diabetes. And so these text reminders to take their medication, that's a big part of the quality of life that a diabetic patient receives, right? So these reminders are really adding to the quality of life and are welcome from your customers, correct?
Yeah. In healthcare, I think most healthcare is done where they're just trying to contract people out. So if you'll notice, when you go to when you get a card, right, you look at your health card and it says you go to, you know, you're with United Healthcare and that's your choice. And then right. What most people don't know is they also assign a pharmacy benefit management to you as well. So consumers in the past have not had a lot of choice. You're just told this is where you go. I mean, how many of us have gone to the hospital and say, now, how much does that cost? Or how much is it going to cost for appendectomy? Are you a good
doctor? I do, and it drives my wife nuts, but I think I'm one of the unusual people.
And then you fight, what's your track record? How have you done? So we've really tried to focus on the consumer and help them out because I don't think that healthcare in general has done a good job in helping the consumer. It's been all about these contracts and the insurance companies. And so what we try to do is work with the consumer direct and help them where they're not getting help elsewhere. For example, the number one reason why most people aren't compliant to their medication, almost half the people go get medication, but half of them don't even go pick it up.
Really?
And so at the retail store. And then another half aren't compliant with even taking their medication like they're supposed to, like they forget to take it.
Right.
So your two biggest problems, they don't get it. And then 30 days later, they're supposed to pick it up again. They forget to pick it up again. And then they forget to take it every day. So we've done very practical things like sending a text reminder three times a day when they're supposed to test. We have an app where they can track their score. For example, if you ask about diabetic, and then they can track their score to see how they're doing. And they can it has calorie counting and things like that that are very important to a diabetic. And so they can track their it's called A1C score. And they can see that they're improving their health. So we do very practical things to help them. It's all consumer-based, where most of healthcare has not been consumer-based.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good point. And, you know, when I gave the introduction at the top of the show, I kind of simplified things a little bit. I said you went from $0 in sales, and now you're over $60 million in sales. But at the beginning, really, you bought another company, MedSource Rx. They were in a different business. They were in the wholesale business. You bought them in 2008, so you did have a base of business when you purchased that company, but you pivoted in 2010 and said, hey, really this wholesale to pharmacies is not the space we want to be in. You decided to pivot and go direct to consumers, which is what we're talking about now. But I want to talk about that decision because clearly it's been very successful for you. But I want to go back to 2010.
Well, it's interesting because if you were to talk to an investor, they typically invest in the CEO and the management team and not necessarily so much the idea. And this is a typical case study for this. I think we had a great management team with probably not a very good business. We were wholesaling, and that business was kind of going away. And so I remember being on the road in New York and calling my business partners, and I said, we are hosed. We are in trouble. This is not I'm the CEO, so I have to look at the future. I'm thinking a year and two down the road and thinking this is not a business I want to be on. There are $0 from that original business. We completely pivoted. The good news is at least the wholesale buying of diabetic supplies, we still do. We just buy for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really the only piece that we left and a great management team. So we pivoted based upon a manager being on top of the market, thinking ahead, with senior managers doing their job, not getting deep in the minutia, so they can look ahead and think what they're supposed to be doing. Your senior managers should be looking ahead. Your middle managers are managing the, you know, the frontline managers. And so I think we had a manager team that has been with growing companies and seen success and failures and knew that this was headed for failure if we didn't change.
Right. And you do have a existing power structure internally in the company, right? I mean, you had somebody that was helping you with your relationships with the pharmacies. That person's power and influence in the company was obviously going to change under this new model. So how did you sell that to the organization and get everybody behind you? Hey, guys, tomorrow we're going to start this new division. And for a couple of years, you did both. But how was that discussion internally handled?
Well, you know, obviously, as a CEO, that's one of the most important things that you need to do is inspire a shared vision. I mean, that's mm-hmm. really important. I mean, if you can't do that and you can't sell it, then you know, it either A, isn't a good idea, or B, you're not doing a good job of selling it. So I really, this was a collaborative effort, meaning that I basically was very humble and said, guys, I don't like where we're heading. I don't have all the answers, but we need to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can tell you it's not this path. And so I said, look, let's get together and let's work on this together. And we all agreed. So we agreed together that we were on the wrong path, and we worked together on getting the right path. So this is more of a process, not an event. So we worked on it together and said, as a management team, yep, we're on the wrong path. Yep, we need to move forward. And that's hard to do. A lot of people, you drink your own Kool-Aid and think you're doing fine. It's easy just to keep doing what you're doing. It's very difficult. So I was able to show them why we're on the wrong path. That was step one. And I said, together, let's find the right path. And we did. We worked together. It took all of us on the management team. It took seven senior managers to literally divide and conquer and look out there and try to find a model that worked. And, you know, two or three of us were kind of driving the charge as sales and the pharmacy, head of pharmacy, and we started putting something together, and we kind of led this committee to find it and came to them and said, look, I think we found it. And they said, man, this looks great. And so using the lean startup model, we tested it, we tried it. And so my point is, I didn't say, look, this is for sure it. I said, I think it's it,
right?
But let's test it. And so when I was able to test it and prove it, we agreed that we'd, you know, after about 1,000 customers later, after outsourcing through another pharmacy, we said, this is working, let's go.
If you're just joining us, I'm speaking with Jeff Smith, CEO of Alliance Health. You know, I when I was preparing for the interview, I wasn't sure which way you'd answer that because your background's unusual in that you had several successes before going to Alliance and starting Alliance. And often there typically tends to be two types of CEOs, two types of leaders, those that have all the answers and are basically bequeathing what the direction of the firm is going to be, and then those that kind of lead by consensus, which is the approach that you took. Those previous successes, though, tend to build the confidence and make it less likely that you're going to take the time to build by consensus. Do you have any thoughts on that? As far as the wisdom of taking that time to get the input from your team.
Yeah, and you're right. I think academically it's proven that as CEOs go further along, you're exactly right. They kind of think they've got it figured out and they kind of try to do more on their own.
I just know from my own mistakes, you know, you have successes and then all of a sudden you start taking shortcuts and that hurts you.
Well, what I do, number one, is I hire people smarter than I am what they do. So that's number one is that when I start an organization, some people get so detailed and who are all the people they're going to hire and who are all the, I don't care. If you get the right person, they'll hire all the people underneath them. All I had to do is get my management team. If I get the best marketing guy, then he'll figure out everything else below that. So I don't get in their details and assume that I know better than they know. So everybody I work with is way smarter than me in what they do. And so I think that I have to rely on them because they know a heck of a lot more than I do. I think any company where the CEO is the smartest guy in the room and is the one that knows everything about everything, it's only going to grow so far. I mean, there's no way a company like that can grow. Half of my job really, or my enjoyment in my job, is really two things. There's a value proposition that we came up with. It's this grand idea that was just this idea, and we whiteboarded it. Next thing you know, which by the way, we have grown even more since the data you got. We're actually well over 100 million this year, and we have almost 130,000 patients now. And we have 400 employees. And this just literally went from 350 to 400 employees like the last quarter.
Which creates really its own issues.
Yes, there's scalability issues. And do you have the right people in place? So we've really got a great management team. And we constantly are hiring the right people to take us to the next level.
So thank you for sharing the update on the sales. It's actually information I have access to, but I'm not going to weave it into our conversation. So my firm, Albion Financial Group, is an investor in your company. I wanted to disclose that. We're also investors in Mercado, so we get the reports that you send out. But I want to talk about the decision to bring on equity at that point. So it was 2013. At that point, is when your sales were $50, $60 million, you were nicely profitable. You didn't need to raise money. Why did you decide to raise money, and why did you decide to raise equity versus debt?
Well, we did a little bit, but we did some debt. But you're right. The reason why we brought in equity is because really we didn't, you know, we were cash flowing pretty well. We didn't really need the money, the cash, but we wanted to take some money off the table for the founders because, you know, when you have most of your net worth in a company, it goes against you at some point. When you're a startup, you want the person starting the company up, the founders or the executives, to kind of be all in. But once you get so much value, it works against you because you're so panicked and you start making—
You make different decisions.
Yes, very conservative decisions. Yep. And so it felt good for us to take some off the table. My business partner, I still own the majority of the company, so we're still, you know, like 50-ish, barely over. So we still have a big chunk in the company, but we took enough off to where, you know, it took care of a lot of our, you know, retirement money and things like that. So it was nice to take some off the table because we had put a lot of money of our own money in. Mm-hmm. We make that pivot. We put millions of our own dollar in, so we kind of went from taking some of our retirement money and putting into this company. Now we want to pull a little bit of it out. So it was just more of a to help us take some off the table, but still be really all in and moving forward.
It sounds a little unusual, but you're right. You know, early on, having skin in the game aligns the investor's interest with the company's interest with your interest, and then later down the road, actually taking some chips off the table more closely aligns what the investors are looking for. Because as an investor, I've got dozens of investments. I want you guys swinging for the fence, but you need to feel comfortable swinging for the fence as well. And one of the ways you do that is by taking some chips off the table. You guys have an incredibly high close rate, and I'm not going to disclose that here. And I don't want you to share any secrets, but just philosophically, I mean, your close rate is probably an order of magnitude higher than what most firms would be in a similar space. Why do you think you've been so effective at that?
Well, first of all, you know, I think it's something that you focus on, right? So part of being good at something is you don't focus on something else. So you really get very good at that. But what we've learned in our management team is what are important metrics, what is going to drive this company. And that's when we realized, hey, we've got to get our cost per acquisition down low. So we, from the day one, said that's a very important metric we have to hit. So we focused on that from the beginning. We really felt like I've done two things, I think, in every company I've been in. As you know, as they mentioned, I'm a serial entrepreneur, and I've been in different industries. But one thing I've learned is you figure out the metric and you are relentless about figuring out how to make that metric work. So what we did is we used technology and people to do that. And that's something that I've done in any company we've worked with, is just learning how to scale a business using technology and people. Utah has some of the best people in the country, and that's why we've been voted one of the best places to work in America, is because we have phenomenal people. You have highly educated people. You have some very unique things, like you have these guys called return missionaries that go out for 2 years around the world. And it's not a Mormon thing. It is what it is. I don't care what religion is. They go for 2 years and sell. And if you can sell religion, you can sell anything.
I completely agree.
And they come back and we hire them. And, you know, we don't say, are you a return missionary? But a lot of them are. And they kill it. And we have people that do summer sales. One of the other things we have going on for us is you have probably the largest summer sales group in the United States is per capita. You have Vivint and all these companies that go out, and these pest control companies that come right here in Utah, they know how to sell. So we have a lot of, so you ask, how do we sell? Because we have people that know how to sell on the phone, mm-hmm. for one. We have a phenomenal systems that we can track how we're doing and where we can be more efficient, and we're constantly improving. Here we are 4 years later, and I'm still improving this process and cycle, and we're getting even better numbers. So our cost per acquisition is still going down, and this is years later because we're still constantly trying to get better at it.
Well, let's come back to that in just a minute. We need to take a quick break, and then we'll talk some more with Jeff Smith, CEO of Alliance Health. Welcome back to The Bottom Line on KCPW. I'm Doug Wells. Today we are speaking with Jeff Smith, CEO and founder of Alliance Health. You used to be known as Ingram Medical as recently as probably 6 months ago. What did you see in Alliance Health that said, you know what, we want to buy this company? Well, and maybe back up, what did the Alliance Health that you purchased, what did they share with our audience what they did and why it was important for you?
Well, from our perspective, they were a lead provider. So they literally just, we would buy a lead from them and then we would call them. And they predominantly focus on internet leads or web leads. So somebody would go to a page and they would say, yeah, I'd like to learn more about test supplies and getting them cheaper. I would be very interested in that. And so then we would call them within seconds of when they click the button. They probably, it actually freaked people out. Like, I just clicked the button 5 seconds ago, literally.
Right.
And their phones ringing. So it's obviously opt in. They asked for, you know, they asked for someone to call them and so, or contact them through email or by phone. And so we bought them because we wanted to have our own lead source. And the other big reason, it made a lot of sense because their markup was quite high. And so our margins would double basically. And so it was a really good, just from that alone was worth doing to kind of own your own source. Plus, to your point, if you can control the data from the beginning all the way through, wow, you can really learn what's happening and help the customer more when you know more and you have more data. So it was for a pure financial decision, it was important. But strategically, it was really, really important because we were focusing on diabetic as a supplier and we were making good money and that's, you know, we're making more money than they were. But what we realized is we could do that with anything. It didn't have to be diabetic supplies. And guess what? Diabetics have a lot of other comorbidities, as they call them, meaning that many of them have hypertension. A lot of that comes from obesity. There's cholesterol problems, heart problems, and unfortunately, there's a lot of other diseases that come with that. And they have all these community sites. So Alliance Health has all these community sites which help people. So we could not only...
Which are these forums where people can talk about, hey, I'm having these issues, and they can talk to other people that are dealing with the same issues. Is that correct?
Well said. Yeah, okay. Exactly. Okay. And they're also a place... That's exactly right. It's also a place for us to give them information. We have a lot of manufacturers that want to give them information and give them deals on products if they're interested, which they can opt into. Almost everybody we work with, we save at least 20% on their spend, which is huge, you know, and of what's coming out of their pocket. So we are excited because we actually are literally helping people. And I love that our value proposition is working. We're getting people to come back.
So you're saving people money. You started the interview talking, and it's unfortunately one of my topics as well. To me, it's just bizarre how the healthcare system works. The fact that I'm unusual when I've got a health savings account, so I usually pay cash when I go to the doctor. And before I go, I call. You know, my daughter thinks she has a strep test. I make a quick 2-minute phone call and say, hey, my daughter thinks she's got strep throat. What are you going to charge me for the test? Well, that sounds a little high. Maybe I'll call down the road. And it's bizarre.
They're probably shocked, by the way, that you called.
It's bizarre, A, how inexpensively you can get stuff done if you ask, but also it's bizarre that societally it's not acceptable to ask that question. I think every part of that equation needs to change. And I wanted to ask, so you're giving your clients a chance to save money. Do they have a personal financial incentive as well? I know most of your clients have private insurance. So is saving that money for people that aren't unusual like me and ask and care about that, is that high on their list of priorities?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's why we're getting so many patients, because we save money. That's the first thing we do is save money. They don't know us from Adam in many cases. Now that we have Diabetic Connect is one of our sites, for example, for diabetics, they do. Mm-hmm. But when we would call them, they didn't know us. So they go, oh, that's good savings. Let me go with you. What they didn't realize, all the other things we do for them, and that's why we keep them.
Right.
We have a very high retention rate, higher than anybody in the industry. So we get them because of the savings. We keep them because we, A, keep the savings, and B, we give them all these other things they weren't expecting, like phenomenal customer service. Our net promoter score is in the 60s. Walgreens, Rite Aid, all the other
which is folks, a likelihood to refer to their friends and family.
That's right.
Is that correct? Yeah.
They're 28. So
wow.
As you probably know, healthcare is... In general, working with consumers is one of the worst of any industry. A Blue Cross Blue Shield is a 5. So not many people are prone. I'm not saying they're a bad company. I'm just saying as far as working with consumers, that's not their strength.
Yeah. No, going to the pharmacy is not a good experience, and you
that's
help
right.
cut that out of
that's
the
right.
equation for folks.
Like we answer the phone live. What a crazy concept. Crazy. That we'd actually call. So when you call and you say, hey, you call the phone, we address their name. We have our technology tells us who they are, which, by the way, is not crazy technology. Lots
right.
of other industries do this as well. But you will not find that anywhere in healthcare that I'm aware of. I mean, you call any of your pharmacy, call your insurance and have them call you by name and answer the phone live without going through some kind of technical. Press 1,
bizarre.
Press 2.
Yeah.
You don't press anything. You just show up and say, hey, John, how you doing? Got all your information here. How can I help you?
Yeah.
And that's how the call starts. That is absolutely unique in healthcare.
Yeah, and it's one of the few industries that is so far behind and hasn't brought these good business practices to the table. If you're just joining us, I'm speaking with Jeff Smith, CEO of Alliance Health. Let me switch gears and talk about being an entrepreneur and then transition into being a serial entrepreneur, which you've got both of those accolades to your credit. Let's start first with being an entrepreneur. You were selected as one of the elite eight CEOs, I think it was just last month, by Utah Business Magazine. And I was reading the quote that you gave the magazine. I want to share it and then ask a question on it. And here's your quote. With our personal and professional lives on the line, a fight had begun to build a highly efficient sales and distribution machine. After months of creative thinking, trial and error, and tenacious persistence, we had ultimately devised a winning team and a successful fulfillment model. What struck me as I read that quote, there's pieces in it that I'd expect from almost any CEO, but the main theme of that was really a theme of a fight. And talk to us about your views of what it takes to succeed as an entrepreneur. Is fight an important element of that?
Yes, I think so. I mean, look, it's competitive, right? There's other people that are looking at the same marketplace. Healthcare is very difficult because, as I mentioned earlier, they focus on it's all contract-based. So the insurance company contracts with somebody, the PBMs, and they try to have this exclusive relationship. And so if you have an exclusive relationship, for example, when you, and you, any of you who do mail order understand this, when you have insurance with your business, they tell you where you're going to get your mail order done. They say, oh, by the way, this is where you go to mail order, and they're the only one. Well, then why would they try to be better and help the consumer if all they've done is contracted in? It's basically no competition. We know when there's no competition what service happens to service, right? Mm-hmm. We all go to the DMV. We know what that is like. No offense. They're probably getting better. But
they are. I was just going to say
they are
actually.
The last time but I went. That's good. Yeah. That's good. That's a good thing. But, you know, there's certain things you do when you know there's no competition. You know the service is not going to be good typically. There's nothing pushing them to be better. And that's the problem. And that's why I think we're fighting against the establishment. And I feel like we're always fighting. There's sites out there like Cast Light. I have no financial interest. I just think it's a cool site, GoodRx, where they actually show you, hey, guess what? You want to go get a procedure done, type it in, and we'll tell you the best place to do it. We'll tell you how good the doctors are. We'll tell you. I think it's awesome that they're telling you what's going on now. So they're – because – one thing good – I'm not a big fan of the Affordable Care Act, but one thing the good that's coming out of it is that consumers are getting more choice with these exchanges. And you'll be able to pick your insurance. You'll be able to pick the PBM separately, and you can start having choice. And I think it's one good thing I think that has come out of it is that there is choice that's coming out of this.
Yeah, and there's additional data. So firms like
that's right.
You can find out what things cost. There's locally, I'll put in a plug for a little startup I have no financial interest in either, but the entrepreneur's working his butt off to make the thing succeed. PricingHealthcare.com.
Yeah, yeah.
And you can find out what procedures. Instead of me taking a 5 minutes to call my doc to find out what a strep test is going to take, this site will tell
you. But your point being people are tired of it. You just mentioned another one that I wasn't aware of, and I mentioned a couple. They're sprouting up. This whole direct consumer idea is important, and that's why we said, look, that's what we're going to focus. We're going to be the advocate for the consumer. And by the way, we are not a nonprofit. We are making money. But the beautiful thing is we can service people and help them and make money at the same time. It's
that's
wonderful.
The way it should be.
And we're completely
exactly.
aligned with them. Yep. You know, we're very aligned with the consumer. Everything we do is aligned with them.
And one of the things I tell folks as they approach my age, right, I'm much better served at my point to just recognize what my weaknesses are, not worry
Absolutely.
So much about trying to correct it, but having people around me that don't have those weaknesses so as a team we can succeed.
Totally agree.
What have you done to kind of make sure that those weaknesses don't have a negative impact on your companies?
Well, like what you said, you did it. That's perfect. I think that, A, recognize it, right? Like anything, recognize it's like the, you know, like I'm an alcoholic, right? If you recognize, I'm not saying I'm an alcoholic, by the way. I don't even drink, but my point is, isn't that the first step of anything is just recognizing that's a problem
right.
and then dealing with it? And I like to look at it as grow the heck out of your strengths. Just get really good at that, but be, but at least get your weaknesses to where they're, you can kind of get around them, be adequate, right?
Right.
You may or may not ever make that a strength, but you can certainly at least make it to where it's minimal. So I first of all try to hire people that I know that have strengths that I don't have, for one. And it's not all about me, I mean, obviously, but I do run the company, kind of has to start somewhere, right? If you're the company, you got to start and you pick the people who you work with. And so I really try to, like my assistant is extremely detail-oriented. She's very patient and she's very analytical and she takes her time. So it really helps me, even my assistant. And I have people on the management team are that way. So the other thing I do is I do things very specific to help me. Like if I don't, for example, I will absolutely forget to take things in the morning. I put things in my shoe or I'll forget. So I have to do, you know, that's silly, but I do very specific things like
right.
that. So I realize that I'm impetuous. So you know what I do? I literally say, I'm not going to make that decision until next Monday. I'm going to make myself be patient. I'm going to make myself not be emotional. I'm going to make myself wait for 3 or 4 days. So I actually put things in place, systems in place to help me, because I know that if on my own I can't. So it's kind of like I have this weakness and I got to have something to help me. So I literally put processes in place.
You know, we're talking about some strengths and weaknesses. What about from the company standpoint? I look at Ingram, huge success. Happy to be an investor with Mercado in that with you guys. I look at Beehive Brick. I don't know the story there. All I know is it was 2 years, increased sales 5X, huge return for investors. But typically in an entrepreneurial story, there's bumps in the road. And I think it's motivational for folks when they come across their own bumps in the road to know, you know, all of these success companies. I mean, look at Apple Computers, right? Almost went bankrupt, right? What, in 93, 94 before Jobs came back. What have been some bumps in the road outside of the pivot that we've already talked about in your experience running your companies?
Wow, like every company I've had, we've had bumps in the road, big bumps sometimes, and we've had to, every company we've pivoted at some point. When I had my own rep firm, I was repping these computer folks, I kind of realized that I need to specialize and focus in areas where I could really win and keep these clients for a long time like I kept these guys for years. And so I think along the way, I just learned to face the brutal facts early on and know, is my value proposition going to last? And I'd always think about that. What I'm offering, can somebody else do it better? And if they can, I either need to find a way so my offering changes or is better than them. So I was always working about what do I offer? What are people really buying from me? And could somebody else offer it better? Because what you don't want to do is win some business knowing that somebody else could win it later because they can really do a better job. You just happen to get ahead of the marketing game. So that's where I really focus is I always focus on this service. Are people willing to buy it at that price and can I make a profit at it? And what am I doing to constantly evolve my business? So I think that I've had all kinds of bumps in the road. I've problems where we didn't have enough money. There's times at Megahertz where I was like, oh my gosh, are we gonna go out of business? We don't have enough money. So we had to get, you know, it's like you're growing too fast. You don't have the capital. And then we got right. the capital. And then it was like, we had the right people. We had to hire the right people. So I can't say anything specific. I think I mentioned one specific pivot we've already discussed, but I can tell you that there's always bumps on the road. And as long as you believe you can win, you can compete, and you really believe in the heart of hearts that what you have will compete, and you're not just kidding yourself, and you know who the competitors are, and you really get it, and you look at the future, you know, that's when you decide, am I done, or do I keep going? And so I've always felt like I've been able to make those right decisions based upon the value proposition we were offering, I knew would work long term.
Right. Well, those are great words to wrap up our interview here today. I thank you for being so candid and open with our audience. Jeff, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Our guest this morning has been Jeff Smith, CEO of Alliance Health. This show was recorded at KCPW Studios on Library Square. It was produced by Ross Chambliss with technical support by Jesse Ellis and Tyler Ford. Thank you, gentlemen, for your help. I'm Doug Wells. Join us next week on The Bottom Line.